This is your host, Tom Kelly, welcoming you again to the Proctor Podcast, and episode 3 of Where's My Fortune Cookie, co-authored by Phil Proctor and Brad Schreiber. Phil's family moves to the Big Apple from the big cornfield, where he's soon introduced to music, acting, editing, and the joys of sex, while his dad pursues a career as a politician and would-be film producer. Now, episode 3 of Where's My Fortune Cookie?
New York, New York, it's a wonderful town. 139 East 94th Street, apartment 6B, between Park and Lexington, was a far cry from Goshen and Elkhart. It was, as I later learned, 2 blocks away from where the Marx Brothers grew up on 92nd Street. From the start of my education, performance was encouraged. I would walk with my mother to a brownstone building 2 doors up that served as kindergarten. We had classes inside and then playtime in the backyard. And oh, those delicious snacks. Our teachers were 2 German maiden ladies who served us buttered white bread with sugar. I'm not sure if health-conscious parents would be fine with that today. I even had the opportunity to learn piano from our marvelous teacher, Helen Soltz, but I didn't pursue it for some reason and regret it to this day, although I can still play the violin when needed. Appropriately for an only child, the first role I played that I can recall was a prince galloping on an invisible horse to the rescue of some little girl. I would have preferred an elephant. I was good with my hands and loved miniatures. I kept all the trinkets I found in a metal container for lozenges, which also served as a bed for a simulated rodent companion I called Mousy. I constructed little clay men and had them climbing all over my room. On a card table in the living room, there was always either a jigsaw puzzle or a balsa wood model airplane or a plastic car in progress. Dad had his own collection of toy soldiers from when he was a boy, and I built on that hobby, collecting my own figures, creating imaginary worlds and conversations, as kids so often do in their earliest years. I built a 4x5-foot battlefield for them, which I kept under my bed. It had tiny shrubs and trees, a gravel road, sand for soil, and handmade brick houses full of miniature furniture crafted from cardboard. The skills to do this came in part from my classmate John Pryke, who had a fabulous HO scale model train setup that took up his entire dining room. I'd often make my way down to Military Miniatures, a nearby shop on Lexington Avenue, and with my allowance, purchased soldiers and trucks and howitzers and the like, even painting them myself so I could stage little wars at home. I went so far as to use tiny firecrackers and lighter fluid to create the effects of shells exploding. Miraculously, my parents never objected to any of this. If I had accidentally set the bed on fire, their attitude might have been different. My fascination for miniature worlds and sets actually won me some prizes at school fairs. I got awards for my military dioramas as well as for a small-scale TV studio set. And if I'd been more of a capitalist, I could have patented the first G.I. Joe. Because I created an articulated man with metallic joints and a body made out of clay, hair from my own head, and clothes crafted from my dad's discarded French silk ties. I've still got it. I guess I was a budding prankster, because I also remember building a shooter out of an empty ballpoint pen rigged with a rubber band to fire safety matches from our 6th-floor window, which would ignite in front of people strolling down the street, scaring the hell out of them. I also perfected wrapping a cap around a BB and throwing that, too. Sure, I was busted a few times, but it was another era. When an Italian guy cranking a hurdy-gurdy with a monkey on top might appear on the street, We'd bombard him from our windows with paper-wrapped coins that his pet scooped up for him. My inventiveness was also fueled by my father, who often came home with new products from clients looking for funding. One night, he arrived with something I was told would replace electron tubes. It was called a transistor, and I was thrilled to pieces when he showed up with the first Polaroid land camera. That revolutionary device later also helped in my sexual education.